Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Darkness by Kyle West, narrated by Graham Halstead. Chapter 1. It was December 21st, 2060, the darkest day of the year, and instead of staying warm in my bunk aboard the Odin, I was freezing my butt off in the pre-dawn darkness, waiting for my ride. Anna stood next to me, shivering. I wondered whether this was the right choice. Makara and I had made the decision that we would investigate Bunker 108 to see if it was a viable option before heading to Bunker 84. Since I was from Bunker 108, I had to be the one to go. Michael would have been the other obvious choice, but Anna had experience flying Askal while Michael got queasy with heights. Gilgamesh was still being used as a makeshift hospital, and Ashton was using Odin to make runs back and forth between Skyhome and the Vegas Exodus, ferrying food and supplies. Riding on Askal had been my idea. Askal tended to hang around our camp anyway, so I thought we might as well put him to use. Now, standing outside in the frigid December air, I was definitely second-guessing my decision. It would have been easier to just have Odin drop us off before heading for Skyhome on one of its runs, but I wanted this idea to work, perhaps because it was my own. I'd flown to the Great Blight before with no issues, and the journey to Bunker 108 would not take all that much longer. At least, that was what I hoped.
"Where is he?" Anna asked, breath clouding the air.
That was when Askal swooped down from over Pyrite's palisade wall, rearing up his feet and landing right in front of us. His clawed toes slid in the dust, kicking up a cloud that sent both Anna and me into fits of coughing. The dragon blinked a few times with his all-white, intelligent eyes, as if surprised to see us out here on this dismal day. Though I was wrapped head to toe in 5 layers of clothing, including a parka, it still didn't feel like enough. My fingers were numb inside my thick, padded gloves. The harsh wasteland wind somehow found a way to chill me. My head was covered with 2 knit caps, the outer one with flaps covering my ears. Despite all of this protection, it felt as if all the clothing in the world wouldn't be enough to keep me warm.
"You were right," I said to Anna. "Coldness to freeze your blood."
My breaths made thick clouds that instantly disappeared into the arid air. I pulled out my canteen from inside my parka. I had warmed the water aboard Odin, and after taking a long drink, I offered some to Anna. She shook her head, merely staring ahead at the Askala, who now, with wide wings, covered his sides to protect himself from the fierce wind. Why we had decided to do this, I couldn't say. And not just being out here in the cold. We were about to go to the one place I'd hoped to avoid for the rest of my life. But it was necessary. We needed confirmation that Bunker 108 would not serve as a shelter for the Exodus. On the small chance that it was suitable, it would be much better than using Bunker 84. Bunker 84 was distant, in the mountains of Northern California. It was far from our eventual destination of Los Angeles. But if our supposition was correct, Bunker 108 would be completely unusable, full of howlers and infected with the xenovirus. Bunker 84 was probably abandoned, which made it the more likely choice. Either way, we had to evacuate Pyrite sometime in the next few days. Even given the food issue, the swarm would soon catch up. Already its front-runners had made their way to its walls, all hastily shot down by the guards that constantly man the walls. If the lack of food and cold didn't kill us, they surely would. Askal gave his pointy head a shake, letting out a snort that sent plumes of fog into the air. I felt the Askala's warm exhalation on my cheek before it was replaced with stinging cold.
"Well," I asked Anna, "you ready?"
Anna nodded. It had been 3 days since the Xeno swarm attacked us on that hill, which led to our being locked behind Pyrite's walls. Odin's sweeps of the area reported that the swarm was gathering, beginning to spread itself in a long line north to south. It was readying itself to make its final push westward.
Despite all that we had learned about the xenovirus and the monsters it spawned, we still didn't know the most important things. Why hadn't they attacked yet while we were still so weak? Ashton's theory was that they couldn't be away from xenofungus for long, which made sense. The fungus was their main food source, even if they did eat people and animals sometimes. Their need to be close to a blight was the one weakness we could pinpoint. It would be nice if we could find a way to get rid of that fungus, but when blights already covered so much of the United States, it seemed like an exercise in futility. Pyrite itself was about 50 miles from the Great Blight, meaning that if these creatures wanted to eat, they had to travel a fair distance between the Great Blight and Pyrite. There were smaller blights, of course, but these were fairly distant from Pyrite. That said, they were growing at an alarming rate. One small blight had cropped up to the southeast of Pyrite and another to the southwest, each about 20 miles away. The real question we all had was how long it would take these smaller blights to join together. Not just these ones close to Pyrite, but all of them. Months? Years? Hopefully it would be no faster than that. Askal unfolded his wings as Anna and I approached his side. I climbed up, using one of his haunches as a stepping stone. I twisted myself and settled on his back between the two ridges that formed a natural, secure seat. I held out a gloved hand to Anna. She reached up, clasping my forearm as I clasped hers. I held tightly as she boosted herself up, and I guided her to Askal's back. Soon she was seated behind me, wrapping her arms around my torso. I felt a little warmth filter in through my outer layers. Perhaps it would be enough to keep the cold at bay. I felt her shake slightly as a particularly chilly wind blew. I checked my belt to make sure my Beretta was still holstered on my right side. I had left the AR behind because I was going light. I didn't plan on getting into any fights. If there was trouble, the plan was to tuck tail and run back to Askal. That was what Makara had told me to do, and I didn't argue on that point. This mission had been more Ashton's idea than anyone else's. It seemed he still held out hope that Bunker 108 was an option. All the same, I wasn't getting my own hopes up. I'd seen what had happened there, and from the way things looked, I'd be seeing it all over again. One of the curious effects of being so fortified against the cold was that I could not communicate with Askal. Sighing, I took off my right glove, feeling like my hand was doused in ice-cold water the minute it touched the air. I hadn't even checked my watch for the temperature. I was afraid of what I might see. I pressed my hand on Askal's smooth back. The scales were hard, but surprisingly warm. Instantly, Askal's thought entered my mind. As it did so, I felt my eyes tickle a bit. It was a very weird feeling. I knew then what was happening. My eyes were changing. I kept my face turned from Anna so she didn't have to see. "Fine day for a flight." I gave a short laugh, my breath sending a cloud of white condensation into the air. "I thought you guys didn't get cold," I thought. Askal snorted. It caused his whole body to shake, and Anna held on to me more tightly. "We fare better than you puny humans, but too long and cold like this would bring down even the mightiest Askala." "Well, good thing we have the mightiest around." I felt a bit of doubt coming from Askal, but all the same, he stamped his feet in preparation to cast off for the cold, dark sky above. Sensing this, Anna wrapped her arms around me even more tightly. I put my glove back on. I felt my eyes revert to their normal state.
"I will never get used to flying on this thing," she said. "This is my third time doing it, and it never gets easier."
I squeezed her hands such as I could in my gloves. "You'll be fine. I'm more worried about freezing to death." Anna said nothing as Askal gently lifted from the ground with several flaps of his massive wings. Outstretched, an Askala's wings were a wonder to behold, perhaps 100 feet from end to end. The Askala themselves had to be incredibly lightweight even with a wingspan like that. I watched Askal's powerful muscles bulge below where I was seated. I wonder how much fungus he had to eat a day in order to have the energy to do this. It had to be a lot. Taking off was always the scariest part, but I found it helped to lean as far forward as possible into Askall's back. It helped us to stay balanced and not be caught by sudden gusts of wind. Below, the tents, wooden buildings, and palisade wall of pyrite fell away as Askall wheeled himself south toward Bunker 108, a place that was sure to kill us if this flight in the cold didn't do the job first. Bunker 108, here we come. From behind, Anna groaned. The journey was as cold and harsh as I expected and more. Anna and I had leaned into Askall's warm body as much as possible. The body temperature of an Askala had to be much higher than that of a human, just judging by the amount of heat radiating from Askall's scales. Even with the majority of Askall's form blocking the harsh wind, gusts still pierced my clothing, sending me into shivers. 15 minutes into our flight, we were high above the wasteland, perhaps 1,000 feet. Any higher and the cold would have been absolutely unbearable. Dawn broke over some low hills in the east, tinging the clouds red where once they had been gray and cold. A sudden wave of exhaustion overtook me. Even with all of this warm clothing, the elements were sapping my strength. The coffee I'd had with my breakfast no longer warmed me. It would be Christmas in just a few days, which seemed a strange thought. Bunker 108 had usually celebrated with extra rations and a full day off, though the significance of the holiday had been lost on the younger generation. I knew the basic story from the few times I'd attended chapel on Christmas Eve. However you looked at it, this time of year was celebrated by a lot of people around the world. These days it seemed that we had little to celebrate. The Exodus was on its last legs, suffering at least a few deaths every day, mostly from cold and sickness. Within 2 weeks, the food would completely run out. The clock was ticking, which made our mission to find a shelter all the more pressing. If there was to be any form of celebration, it would come only when everyone was safe underground. We had been in the air for 2 hours, and so far, Askall had given no sign of slowing. It was about 200 miles total to Bunker 108 from Pyrite. I didn't know how fast he could fly, but it didn't seem to be that fast at all, judging by how slowly the twisted, dusty landscape passed below. As the day brightened, the desert floor was lit its usual crimson. I had no idea if we had a couple of hours more or even as much as 6 hours. This was the main reason we had left so early. So far, the sun had not brought much heat, though it seemed to have warmed ever so slightly since we set out. "How are you holding up?" I asked Anna. She buried her face in my back. "Cold." "We can go to the ground, find some place to warm up a bit." She didn't answer. On our way to Bunker 108, we would probably be flying across or at least close to Oasis. It would have been a good place to rest, except for the fact that we were flying on Askall and would likely be shot once in range. Also, such a stop would add time to our journey. I had a long-range radio attached to my belt, so I could contact Odin or Gilgamesh if things got too unbearable. The radio was for emergencies and status reports, but if things did get too cold, it was good to know we had a way out. "We'll make it there soon enough," I said. "And when we do, we'll have Odin pick us up this time."
"If Odin isn't busy," Anna said. "I didn't think it would be this bad."
Even if it was absolute misery, we would make it, if only because we had to. That was when I saw wooden buildings rising on the horizon, surrounded by a wooden wall. In the center of the buildings was a gleaming pond, frozen. "Oasis," I said. Anna perked up behind me, looking over my shoulder. Smoke rose in streams from the clustered wooden buildings on Oasis's southern side. It was good to see at least one settlement alive when so many had already been overwhelmed, even if that settlement was Oasis. I wondered what Olin's reaction would be to the Vegas Exodus and the New Angels, that is, if he did not already know about us. "Hard to believe we've flown this far already," I said.
"Oasis is at least 100 miles from Pyrite."
Askall flapped his wings in long, steady sweeps, never breaking his rhythm, oblivious to our conversation. The Askala was a lot faster than I'd given him credit for. It would just be an hour or two more until we touched down by Bunker 108. This thought was both welcome and unwelcome. Welcome because we would be out of the cold air, and unwelcome because we had to go inside that horrible place. A few minutes later, we passed over the city. The buildings below looked empty and forlorn. I would have thought the town abandoned, except for the fact that I saw a few people walking its streets, pausing to look up at us. Some of the people ran for the cover of buildings. Obviously, they'd seen Xenodragons before. We were far enough above the town to be out of range, unless someone below happened to get a very lucky shot. We soon found ourselves flying over a line of hills, having passed the town in mere seconds. I realized with a start that Makara and I had traversed these hills a little over 3 months ago, when we'd been running from Brux and his gang of raiders. Seeing that rough terrain pass in just a minute was a bit surreal. It had taken hours to cross those jagged hills. Below, toward the east, a winding trail struck across the desert plain between two ridges of mountains.
"Raider Road," Anna said. "Runs from Raider Bluff in the east all the way to Los Angeles in the west. A little farther south, and it takes a turn for the city along the line of I-10.
"Which all means what?"
"That if Bunker 108 is north of I-10, we must be close."
It had taken a little over a week for me to get from Bunker 108 to Oasis when I had first entered the wasteland, but I hadn't been going in a straight line. I'd set off east and had wandered aimlessly for a week before meeting up with Makara. That meant that Oasis might not be that far from Bunker 108 as I'd originally thought, perhaps only a 2 days' journey. Bunker 114 and Bunker 108 were about 50 miles apart, and Oasis was probably halfway between Bunker 108 and Bunker 114, give or take. My brain did a flip as its internal cartography was thrown upside down.
"So I don't really know exactly where I'm going anymore," I said.
"We just have to find that trailer you talked about, right?"
Yeah, that was all we had to do. We just had to find a line of really big mountains, but there were a lot of mountains in this area toward the south. Oh, it could take a while to search. Anna squeezed my shoulder.
"There it is! That has to be it."
She pointed to our left, down into a secluded red valley surrounded by mountains. There gleamed a small, metallic shimmer. There was no doubt. It was the trailer, all right. The very same one where Chloe had died, where I'd been left alone in the world. The flood of emotion came back in full force. I hated this place and all of the terrible memories it held, things I would never be able to forget, no matter how hard I tried. I had never intended to return here, yet here I was. I tried not to think about how the Red Valley reminded me of blood. I tried not to think of all the people who had died, tried not to think of the spot where I buried Chloe over 3 months ago. I pulled my glove off and placed my cold, bare hand on Askal's back, allowing him to read my thoughts. "This is it," I said. Askal snorted in acknowledgement, immediately circling down toward the trailer. Anna and I gave a start at the sudden change in trajectory, but we leaned forward into Askal's body. I held tightly to the ridge on Askal's back, and Anna wrapped her arms tightly around me. As we lowered, butterflies rose in my stomach. The trailer grew bigger as we approached. The air warmed, but only slightly, as we descended. It was the only welcome change. By the time Askal alighted, I felt frozen to my spot from both physical cold and nerves.
"Come on," Anna said, hopping off onto the ground. "We'll be out of here in no time."
I looked down at her doubtfully, but in the end I supposed she was right. Maybe this would only take a few minutes, and then we would be back on our way to Pyrite aboard the Odin. I eased myself down, sliding off Askal's back. Pinpricks flooded my feet as I landed with a thud on the ground. I shook each foot, wincing, trying to get some circulation back. I took a few steps forward to work out the stiffness. Only 30 feet in front of me lay the trailer, just as I'd left it 3 months ago. If there was any difference, it was that it was covered with even more red dust and grime. There must have been a dust storm recently. The bunker entrance wasn't far. I didn't even know what I expected to find. Chloe and I had shut that bunker door, which would make it impossible to get in. If the main entrance was closed, there was always the motor pool entrance. I didn't even know where that was, though I supposed I could ask Michael by radio if it came to that. I took a deep breath. I didn't want to be a coward. But then again, maybe my fear was justifiable when I'd lost everyone I cared about in a single, horrifying night. Anna had never had that experience in this place, even if she had experienced it elsewhere. She walked toward the trailer. Her hand was on her holstered pistol rather than her katana. She stood in front of the trailer door, reached out her left hand, and tried the latch. "Wait," I said, jogging to catch up with her. It might have been overly protective of me, but I didn't want her going in anywhere by herself. It was a silly sentiment, since Anna was far more likely to protect me than the other way around. The metallic door swung wide open, and Anna took a few steps back, her hand never leaving her handgun. The opening revealed only darkness. We waited a few moments before approaching the trailer once more. "Me first," I said. Anna shrugged, letting me pass. I flipped on the light, and everything was illuminated in a pale yellow glow. Everything was as I had left it. The couch, the fridge, even the red fleece blanket that had covered Chloe and me were all still in their places. The cabinets were opened from when I had rummaged in them for food and supplies. Whatever the case, it didn't seem like there was anything of interest now. I shut off the light and closed the door, stepping back onto the dusty ground. Askal stared at me with his white alien eyes. I wondered what was going on in his mind. He knew that I wanted him to wait here until we got back from the bunker. Just looking at the Escala reminded me that I was infected with the xenovirus. Elikai or not, it still gave me the shivers. I didn't know if that was something I could ever get used to. Anna looked at me and smiled, her thoughts seemingly distant. We'd had more than a few conversations lately about what the Wanderer told me. I still felt defensive when the subject of the Elikai virus came up. It made me feel different from everyone else.
"We could stay here for tonight if the exploration takes a long time," Anna said.
"I don't plan on staying here the night," I said. "It's too dangerous." I'd already lost one girl I loved at this place. I didn't want to lose another.
"You going to be okay?" Anna asked. I felt sudden sadness clench my throat.
"Yeah." She touched my shoulder, grabbing on and pulling me close.
"You'll be fine," she said, looking me in the eye and smiling. "We'll try to get done before the day is out."
I nodded. Maybe Anna didn't understand why I hated this place so much, but that was to be expected. I didn't expect anybody to understand. Too often, that was just the way things were.
"Sometimes all you can do is put one foot in front of the other," Anna said. "You can't get anywhere without that."
I nodded, and Anna started walking in the direction of the bunker. "Wait," I said. Anna paused, half turning back to me. "There's something I need to do first." As Anna raised an eyebrow, I turned away and circled around the trailer. I didn't know if Chloe's grave would still be there, but I intended to find out. I couldn't pass up the opportunity to see her. I didn't know when or if I would come back here again. I walked on, and as soon as I rounded the trailer's corner, I paused. The rocks I'd laid on the ground over 3 months ago were still there, perfectly arranged in the shape of a heart. The rocks were partially covered in red sand. No one had been this way since I'd left. Somehow, that gave me comfort. I walked forward a few steps, the tip of my boots touching the bottom point of the heart. The cold wind let up, and everything stilled into silence as I watched that spot of earth. It was so hard to believe that it had only been 3 months ago. It felt like another lifetime, another person. But the feelings were still there, visceral and bleeding. I'd often wondered what things would have been like if Michael and I hadn't found that man infected with the xenovirus. Everything would have been different. Bunker 108 would still be running, probably. My father would still be alive. Chloe, over whose grave I stood, would still be alive. At the same time, I would have never met Anna, Makara, or Samuel.
This whole mad quest to save the world would have never started in the first place. I realized that it had all happened for a reason. Maybe this loss was necessary. I hated the thought that any loss was necessary, but I also saw how Chloe's death led to everything we had accomplished, discovering the origins of the xenovirus, meeting the Wanderer, gathering the Vegas gangs, discovering the purpose behind the Elokai and the Radiskim. Even knowing this, I knew there were no guarantees. Chloe's death would mean nothing if we failed, if we were destroyed by the Radiskim in their aim to conquer all life. Even with the Wanderer guiding me, there was the overwhelming probability of failure. After all, hadn't a thousand worlds already failed? What made ours so special? But at least we had the chance to go down fighting, like Chloe had. Anna stood next to me and laid a hand on my shoulder. I wrapped my right arm around her waist. She leaned into me, silent.
"This is it, isn't it?" she asked.
I nodded. This was it. Or at least, that was what I had thought 3 months ago when I had left the spot behind and wandered into the wasteland with nothing but the clothes on my back and a pack filled with a blanket, water, and granola. That had been the beginning of a whole new life, a whole new person. It was a life that, surprisingly, lasted more than a couple of weeks. And now here I was, standing with someone I loved over the grave of someone I had loved. "Come on," I said. We turned from the grave and trod south in the direction of the bunker door, about a mile distant. Making peace with my past such as I could gave me a strength to go on that I had not expected. With Anna by my side, I could handle scouting this bunker. I could handle anything. At least, that was my hope. Chapter 2.
"It's open."
Anna stared into the dark opening of Bunker 108. That vault door, which Chloe and I had closed so long ago, had swung inward all the way. Either the wind had blown it open, which I found unlikely, or someone, or something, had come out after us on that dreadful night long ago. Or, perhaps, someone had gone in. I didn't know which prospect was the worst. If someone had gone inside, a raider, perhaps, seeking spoils, the odds that they had come back out again were very slim. And yet, that was what we planned on doing. If the door was open, then there was a chance the Howlers had gotten out. Whatever that door being open meant, one thing was clear. Neither of us had expected it.
"Should we still go in?" Anna asked.
I hesitated. I wanted to say no, but Makara would probably want us to scout this out. You didn't just turn tail and run when you encountered the unexpected. "Let me race her." I put the radio to my mouth. "Makara, got a copy?" Static sizzled from the speaker as Anna and I waited for what seemed an eternity. Finally, Makara responded.
"Go ahead.
We're here. The door's open. Chloe and I didn't leave it like this. It means someone has gone in or come out since then." I stared into the darkness. I imagined Makara sitting safe on the deck of Gilgamesh 200 miles distant. Was she going to decide to risk our lives? "Proceed with recon?" I asked. Finally, Makara answered.
"Do you smell anything?"
It seemed a strange question at first, but I soon realized its significance. Anything infected with a xenovirus carried a trademark rotting odor. I inhaled deeply, the icy cold air stinging my lungs. I smelled absolutely nothing. "Negative," I said.
"We could proceed just partway in," Anna said. "There's no way we can find out anything standing out here."
That much was true, and it seemed a huge waste to fly all the way down here just to turn back.
"Go ahead and proceed with the recon," Makara said. "Odin should be there late afternoon after it drops the last of the food. That gives you guys 6 hours to find out what you can. And if anything jumps out at you, run away. Don't fight. Run to that creature and get in the air first thing."
"Copy that. I'm turning the radio off, but we'll update you soon. Over and out." I clicked the radio off and clipped it to my belt.
I set my pack on the ground, fumbling in its largest pocket for my flashlight.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?